From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Police in Missouri have identified the armed suspect that entered a Springfield Walmart store as a 20-year-old Dmitry Antrachenko, who was reportedly stopped at gunpoint by an off-duty firefighter before being taken into custody by police. He was booked into the Greene County Jail on an arrest charge of making a domestic terrorist threat in the first degree, according to the booking information from the Greene County Sheriff's Department. He apparently walked in and had a 100 loaded round gun of ammunition. Jeez, when does it stop? 5-year-old Cincinnati girl suffered from temporary paralysis following a tick bite. Avery Mell was taken to the Cincinnati Children's Hospital earlier this month after the young girl fell face first onto her bathroom floor. According to her mother, doctors were unsure what was sickening the girl until the mother found two dogwood ticks hiding behind her daughter's ear. By the time they were located, the ticks were the size of a quarter. Gosh. As we reported yesterday, falling asleep can feel like an impossible task sometimes. While some people fall asleep easier than others, everyone experiences the occasional sleepless night. Well, according to a new long-term study, the key to a better night's sleep may just be looking at the brighter side of life. So I thought we'd check in with the expert on the human brain, Howard Bloom. Howard, why would that be the case?
Well, first of all, optimism and pessimism determine how healthy you are. Optimism, if you're an optimist, it boosts your immune system. In other words, your body can fight off disease. And if you are pessimistic, if you're disturbed by a lot of problems, if you have a lot of stress, your immune system goes on low and it does not drive out disease. In other words, optimism drives illness out and pessimism invites illness in. So when you are optimistic, you are in far better shape. And something to know about optimism, when a long time ago, when I was founding my PR firm, which became the biggest PR firm in the music industry, and somebody would call me and ask me what I could do for them, all I could think of were my failures. I had a list of them in my mind. It occurred to me that about once a month, I thought of one of my successes. So over the course of time, I started writing the successes down on a 3x5 card until at the end of the year, I had a whole bunch of successes, a dozen of them. And then I committed those successes to memory. It changed my life. And in all probability, it didn't just change my mental life, my emotional life. It probably changed my physiological life and my life in terms of health.
So what people simply have to do to get a better night's sleep is just be a little happier.
Be a little happier and count your blessings and take notes. So, and look at those notes periodically so you know the good stuff going on in your life.
Thanks, Howard. Have yourself a good weekend, a great weekend. President Donald Trump called on the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates by a full percentage point, saying the nation's economy was being handcuffed by the U.S. Central Bank's monetary policy. We'll see what happens. A couple weeks ago, they lowered it by 0.25%. Uber reported a $5.2 billion loss. Its shares dropped as much as 12% in the quarter. $5 billion in the quarter. Two Australian children were brushing their teeth and getting ready for bed when they were confronted by a 5-foot-long python in their bathroom. The snake had slithered its way into the Queensland home, eventually finding its way through a missing light bulb fixture into the bathroom ceiling. A snake catcher was called by the family to remove the reptile from the home. He released it out into a local creek. What's going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Hey, Peter, what do you have for us?
Good evening, George. Well, it's been my impression for probably several years now that these things we refer to as UFOs are becoming more brazen. They're showing themselves much more overtly than used to be the case. Normally, I deal with lights in the sky and things that are hard to identify. These four cases that I'd like to present to our audience tonight are examples of that I think support my theory. First case comes from Elk Grove, California. It's a report that arrived just today. It's about a sighting that occurred 2 weeks ago tonight in Elk Grove, which is just a little south of Sacramento. gentleman reports that he was standing outside admiring the clear night sky. He was standing in an area behind his house to shade him from ambient light when suddenly his peripheral vision picked up an object that was moving very rapidly, so rapidly that it covered about 120 degrees of sky in about 8 seconds. It looked like a stick of chewing gum, he said. Very aspect ratio of about 4 to 1, he says.
Hmm.
And very bizarre. Another noteworthy fact is that there were no lights on this craft at all. Next report I'd like to share comes from Whitsett, North Carolina. Gentleman writes that he was on the 5th of this month, Monday night, he was standing outside admiring the clear night sky, as in the first case I cited, and he became aware of a triangular craft that formed in very light cloud. It started rotating, and ribbons of light streamed out from the center to the edge of the craft. Very unusual sighting. I mention it because I've received several similar cases to that, similar reports. Third case I'd like to talk about comes from Harriman State Park, about 45 minutes drive north of New York City. Gentleman writes that he was driving on a very remote section of that park. He had three passengers in his car, adult passengers, and they saw three disc-shaped craft sitting motionless above the nearby row of trees. They suddenly accelerated and disappeared in the night sky almost faster than their eyes could track it. It's worth mentioning that the passengers in this car were a retired New York Police Department sergeant, a trauma and ER nurse, and a former U.S. Marine Corps recon soldier. So very good, very reliable witnesses, and they all agreed that they'd seen the same thing. Last report I'd like to share briefly comes from Federal Way, very close to SeaTac Airport, just south of Seattle. At about 45 after the hour, after midnight this morning, Pacific Coast time, of course, a gentleman saw some strange lights as he drove south on I-5, Interstate 5. And as he got, initially he thought it was an airliner landing at SeaTac. But as he got closer, he saw a dark triangle with lights on the corners. He saw it in his rearview mirror, so the lights he saw were not directional. That is, they weren't pointing forward on this craft. Very interesting sighting. This is about the third report I've made of a sighting close to SeaTac in the last 6 months. So that's my report. Lots going on, and I encourage people to submit reports if they see anything unusual.
Talk to you next week, Peter. Thank you. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, Jim Harrell back with us. Let's have some campfire stories, ghost stories, strange stories, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our special guest for the next couple hours, Jim Harrell, is among America's most popular paranormal podcast hosts with his free programs, The Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harrell's Campfire. Jim has developed a very loyal following over the last 12-plus years, and he was with us in Columbus, Ohio over the Mother's Day weekend this year with his stories and just did a great job. I hope you had as much fun as we did, Jim.
Oh, yeah, it was a great event, very honored, great responsive audience, and it was just a lot of fun and so nice to spend time with you and Tom and the audience down there. That was fantastic, so thanks again.
What's new with you these days?
Well, I'm just out here collecting campfire stories. We just recently celebrated the 10th year of that program, and the stories just keep coming in, and the thing is that after 10 years of doing this, you would think, oh, you've kind of heard it all, but the listeners keep bringing in new and unique stories, and, almost every week it's like, well, I never heard that one before, so it's always fascinating.
They just keep coming, too, don't they?
Well, yeah, and I think that really speaks to the fact that this is a visceral part of the human experience. I talk to people from all around the world, and it crosses cultures, but yet these people have these fascinating stories that they could be ghost stories or cryptids or UFOs or my favorite, head scratchers. And the hits just keep coming, as they say.
How'd you get involved in this, Jimmy?
It goes back to when I was a very small child and used to watch Leonard Nimoy on In Search Of. And continued through the years as I grew up and I read more and so forth. And I'd gone to school for broadcasting, ended up on the business side of broadcasting. And in 2005, I heard about something called podcasting. And there weren't really a lot of people out there doing it. And I said, you know, I'd love a great podcast about the paranormal. And nobody was really doing it much at that time, maybe a couple of people. And I said, I'm going to just do it for fun. And lo and behold, it kind of caught on, and it's turned into my full-time job. So I feel very blessed to do something like this where I can connect with so many people who are interested in the same things that I am, and I think so many people are.
When we take calls next hour with you, I want to do something a little differently with our listeners, our amazing listeners, and see if they can share one of their stories with you, Jim, that you might be able to keep and save.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be great. I love that idea.
So get your stories ready, folks. We're going to take calls with Jim Harrell later on tonight on Coast to Coast. I'm going to throw some titles your way, and then you tell us the story, okay?
Okay.
A man buys an antique mirror and gets more than he bargained for.
Oh, this is one of the creepiest stories ever. We just had this in the last couple of months. This was Michael from Los Angeles, and he went to an estate sale, and he was there with his wife. And they were looking at some things, and this lady, I believe it was her grandmother who had passed, she wanted $500 for this assortment of items. And Michael told his wife, we can't afford this. I'd love to have this stuff, but can't do it. And the woman took his name and said, well, I'll get in touch if I can't sell it. Next day she called. She said, you know, you were so nice. The people here now are trying to get, they're being very disrespectful. I'll give you the whole lot, what you wanted for $50. Plus, I'll throw in this great antique mirror because I think you're meant to have it. So he gets the stuff. He brings this mirror home, and it's so heavy. It's one of these old kind of lead antique mirrors. Can't mount it on a wall, has it leaning on a corner. So one day his wife is out, he's sleeping, and he hears a big jolt. He wakes up, and because he's in L.A., he assumes it's an earthquake. Well, it's not. But he comes to, he kind of rubs his eyes, and he looks, and he sees a large crowd of people in his living room. They're all kind of blurry, except for one man standing there with his arms behind his back, and he's looking at Michael in dated clothes. Michael says a couple of expletives because he can't figure out what's going on. But he starts talking to this weird man telepathically. And the man says to Michael telepathically, we came with the mirror.
Ooh.
We came with the mirror, and we like to have parties and dance. Now, Michael is beside himself. He's kind of like, what are you doing here? He doesn't know what's going on. This man comes closer to him. He leans in and he says, we never got our last dance. That's where you come in. And then Michael kind of rubs his eyes, and he wakes up, and he's like, oh, my gosh, what a great dream. I need to write a script for this. I'm in L.A. And he thinks he's had a dream. But then his cat sits up, and he looks at something right where this guy was, and he hisses and then runs out of the room. And that sets off a whole bunch of strangeness. Weird noises. He'll be downstairs with his wife, and now he'll hear people upstairs. So things get darker. Weird coincidences start happening, and this continues for years. And he meets a ghost hunter, and the guy comes over to the house with all of his fancy gear. Guy doesn't immediately call him back. Michael calls him back and says, we need to talk. And Michael says, yeah, what'd you find? There was nothing there, right? And he said, oh, no. He said, yes, there is something there. It's the most activity I've ever seen. I've done this for several years. And he said he picked up 9 different voices.
Wow.
He came over, played it for Michael, and the guy wrote down the card what he thought it said. And he asked Michael and his wife, he said, what do you think it said? And Michael said, we're all demons. And he turns over the card, and it says, we're all demons. Now, Michael coincidentally was involved in the theater group that was called Demon Theater or something like that.
Hmm.
So he thought maybe it was just referring to that. But the darkness just continued and just continued and continued from there until he brought some people to cleanse the home. He would get scratches on his body. Finally, all this cleared up around 2015, and nothing has happened since. But there seems to be, and I'm sure you've heard stories too, it seems, despite this clearing up in 2015, there seems to be something mystic about the energy of an old mirror.
There sure is. There sure is. That's, now, how do you get stories like that? How did they come to you?
Basically, I say to my callers, much like you do, I say, hey, sign up, and we will have you on the show, and you tell your stories. And, you know, there's some more mundane kind of stories, and then you'll get a classic one like this that is really, you know, like a Twilight Zone or a night gallery or something like that. But for the most part, I think our callers are very sincere, and they believe they experienced what they are communicating. I think I've had a couple people over the years try to pull my leg, but for the most part, I think people are being very genuine, very sincere.
The late Rosemary Ellen Guiley was a huge fan of mirrors. She liked black mirrors.
Scrying, yeah. Rosemary was the best. I mean, she was, I know you said that she'd been on your show 60 times. She had been on my show only 20 times. Only 20 times. But we had been at different events together. We were both speakers on a paranormal cruise. Just the nice, the best researcher, the best writer, and the best person.
Yeah, we miss her. We're going to have a special tribute to her in a couple weeks.
Yeah, very sad.
So I look forward to that. Next one. A volunteer firefighter has a deadly dream that soon will become too real.
Now, this one you're hearing even before I've aired it on the show. This just came in the other night.
All right.
Now, Greg is a volunteer firefighter. Very nice guy. I think from Georgia, if I'm remembering correctly. One evening, he had this strange dream. And in the dream, he arrives on an accident scene involving an early 90s Ford pickup that is very bright white, and that's important to remember because that will come into play. And he's approaching the scene. It's over the side of a hill, and there's another first responder there, and the responder says, well, there's no use going down there. There's nothing that anyone can do for that guy. In other words, a person that passed. And he remembered in the dream a couple of things. Again, it was a 90s Ford pickup, very early 90s Ford pickup. It was very bright white, and it had very odd dimensions. It was very long for a pickup, much longer than a standard pickup. So anyway, he woke up, thought, boy, what a weird dream that was. And he was out and about, and he got paged. Turns out there was a car accident. There had been an accident where a cement truck had been hit, and there were injuries. So he went to the scene. He gets there, and it turns out that someone driving a cement truck had parked by the side of this two-lane road to help down a broken-down motorist. A woman had broken down. This guy, Good Samaritan, who also happened to be in the volunteer fire department, did the Good Samaritan thing and was helping her out. It turns out that a pickup had gone around the corner at a high rate of speed, slammed right into the cement truck. Now, the cement truck driver and the woman were fine. Unfortunately, the driver of the pickup was dead.
Oh, gosh.
He was driving an early 1990s Ford pickup. And two other notes came into play on this. He hit a very bright white cement truck that was nearly the same dimensions of the truck in Greg's dream.
There you go.
Don't tell me. Premonitions exist. And I told Greg this, and I mean this. There's two explanations for this. The first one would be that he's making it up, which I do not believe. I do not believe he's making this up, and I told this directly to him. Or premonitions exist. I believe the latter. I believe premonitions do exist.
Absolutely. Jim Harold with us. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back in a moment with more of his campfire stories. And then next hour when we take your calls, maybe you have a story or two you might want to share with us as well that Jim can collect and use on some of his future podcasts and programs. He's also got a couple books out, several of them, as a matter of fact, The True Ghost Stories, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then also Jim Harold's Campfire, True Ghost Stories. And we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Jim Harold. If you need to reach us, it's George at coasttocoastam.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, And follow us on our YouTube channel at Coast to Coast AM Official. That's what you put in the YouTube search bar. We'll be back in a moment with more of Jim Harrell's campfire stories. And next hour, we'll take your phone calls with him and your campfire stories, if you would share those with us. The editor of Coast to Coast AM, our website, of course, is none other than Tim Banal, who picks some amazing stories that you can read at our website, coasttocoastam.com. Tim's with us with his weekly report on some of the stories he selected. Hello, Tim. Welcome back.
Hey, good to talk to you, George. Tonight's, well, actually last weekend, but we weren't together, but this is our anniversary now. We've been doing these segments for a year now.
God, time flies, doesn't it?
I know. I've had a blast, so thanks so much for having me on.
More to come. More to come, my friend. What do you have for us this week?
I think you're really going to like this first one. This kind of blew my socks off. Now, there was a study back in 1988. It was a landmark study of the Shroud of Turin, authorized by the Catholic Church through independent labs in England, United States, and Switzerland. It's the one most cited by skeptics and people who don't believe that it was a miraculous relic. And this was the study. I'm sure you heard it because there's been lots of Shroud of Turin guests on the show in the past. They say, you know, that the study said it was between 1260 and 1390 and that it was a medieval hoax. That's always been cited for like the last 30 years. Well, the data from these labs have been kept secret from the public for nearly 30 years. And finally, through a Freedom of Information Act in England, they were able to get the raw data from these labs from the British Museum. It was like a legal gambit. It was that's how hard it was to get this information. And they subjected the raw data to another study. And this team of scientists say, and I'm going to quote them here, there is no guarantee that all these samples taken from one end of the shroud are representative of the whole fabric. It is therefore impossible to conclude that the Shroud of Turin dates from the Middle Ages.
I love it.
Doubts cast on the Shroud of Turin once again. Who knows? We almost have to start from scratch here on this one.
So. That's right.
Now, the next story, I think you're also going to love a lot. This one, it's in the number one spot in the carousel. It's been dubbed the Emoji House. It's a house in California. I don't know if you've seen this on the news. It got pretty far and wide.
Weird.
So wild. A woman in California, she's been in a dispute with her neighbors, and out of nowhere, the house was painted Pepto-Bismol hot pink with two giant emojis on the sides. And it's believed, she says it's because she wants to, how did she describe it? She says it's a message to me to be positive and happy and love life. But unfortunately, the company that painted the emojis and the hot pink posted on their Instagram essentially the backstory to all this, which was that she was in a dispute with her neighbors, and it was her way of sending a message to the neighbors to not meddle in their business. That's why one of the emojis has their mouth zipped shut. So, yeah, we don't know what the fate of the emoji house is going to be now, but I can only imagine if you live next door, now that it's got worldwide headlines, it's probably even worse to see out the window.
Love it. Great stuff, Tim. Keep it up.
Thanks a lot, George.
All right, Tim Banal, our news editor of CoastToCoastAM.com. And welcome back to Coast, Jim Harrell, our special guest. We'll take calls with Jim next hour. Jim, let's get into what I don't believe in coincidences, but you've got it labeled as a weird coincidence in recording campfire involving unique but similar stories. What's that all about?
Yeah, you know, it's really weird. Sometimes the show seems to take a life of its own on, almost like an unseen hand is producing it. And the way the mechanics of the show, just to peek behind the curtain work, is that people sign up, we get in touch with them, we send them a link, and we say, hey, we have some blocked out times, they can select the time to record, and I have certain hours I record and so forth. So this one evening, I open up my list of recordings, and there is the first call I take, and self-scheduled. I didn't have anything to do with the scheduling. I just said time's available. The woman signed up. She lived in a haunted college dorm, and the story surrounded a ghost who supposedly in life hung herself in an elevator that was in this dorm, and the ghost haunted the dorm and specifically my caller's room. Now, that was a strange call. The very next call, and again, I had nothing to do with scheduling these, was from a woman in a completely different part of the United States who went to a haunted restaurant and had an encounter with a ghost who, you guessed it, supposedly hung herself in an elevator. Now, the thing is that these two people could have had no communication. I've done the show for 10 years. I've heard hundreds, if not thousands, of stories, and I've never had one story about a ghost who had hung themselves in an elevator, and I had two back to back. Now, I don't know if that was the universe telling me, hey, you're on the right track, Jim. There's something really here to this strange stuff, or just a wild coincidence. But I'm like you. I don't believe in coincidences. Now, if it had been two stories like things that we normally hear, sure, that could happen. But I've never even heard of a story of a ghost who supposedly hung themselves in a mirror during the show or outside of the show, all the reading and research I've tried to do over the years. So I just thought that was a funny little anecdote that shows that sometimes I find my show is produced by an unseen hand.
That's just my dead grandmother. What's that one?
This was Lucia from Italy. We do get a lot of international submissions, and she's truly a globetrotter because she'd been studying in New York City. And her story is actually when she went to one of her classmates' house down in the Dominican Republic. And she was staying there with her friend from school. And they've been having a lot of problems with flooding and problems with their water system, their plumbing in the house and so forth. So anyway, one night Lucia woke up while she was staying here, and she heard an old woman's voice speaking in Spanish outside her door in the local dialect and rattling what sounded like a large ring of keys. Now, Lucia assumed it was something to do with this problem because when they would have this flooding problem, relatives would come over in the night and help them. So she thought it was part of that. Now, before Lucia had offered, being a nice person, she offered to help many times when this happened, but they always said, go back to bed, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it. So in the morning, she's talking to her host, her friend, and she said, oh, I'm so sorry you had those water problems again last night. You know, I heard somebody sound like an older lady, I'm so sorry you had all this problem. And the woman said, we didn't have any problem last night. We didn't have any flooding. We went right to bed. And she said, there was no relatives in the house, no one. Lucia told her about the voice outside her door, and her friend interrupted her and said, did you hear keys? And she said, yes, I heard an older woman's voice and keys. And she said, well, that's just my abuela, grandmother in Spanish. She died 2 years ago, and you were sleeping in her room, and she comes to visit from time to time. Now, Lucia froze, and her friend kept asking her. She said, did she speak quickly and in dialect? And Lucia said yes. And she said, Lucia, did she shake your bed by any chance? And Lucia said, no. And she said, oh, that's good. That means she likes you. apparently her grandmother was obsessed with locks and security and always carried a large ring of keys with her. So that's what she was hearing. And Lucia's friend went on to say that her grandmother comes to visit her sometimes when she's by herself in her kitchen, and all the doors and drawers will open up, and she'll say, abuela, I'm not in the mood for this today. And then all of the doors will close right in front of her eyes.
Wow.
Lucia said she stayed there for another week. She was not creeped out and nothing else happened. She said she was shocked that it happened to her, because usually when paranormal things happen around her, she gets nervous. But she thought this was a very positive, non-traumatic paranormal experience. And she was glad she got to meet the ghostly abuela, the ghostly grandmother.
I love that story. That one's cool. Next one, a specter drags my caller across a room.
Yes.
What the heck is that?
This was so creepy because to me, you know, like that last story, you hear something move, you see something move, it's innocuous. But when things start physically interacting with you and dragging you or physically pushing you, then you get into the area of things like poltergeists. And this story is from Cliff, and he lives in the South, and he moved into a pool house. and younger guy. And I'm assuming he was probably, I'm guessing when this happened, around college age. It was kind of an inefficiency. And he was sleeping in this pool house. And the first night he goes to the restroom. And then, as he described it, he was forced gently to the ground. He said, he described it as almost like someone might do it as to an animal. He said that it was, he said, suggested forcefully but carefully towards the floor and pushed towards the floor. When he got to the floor, there had been an ambient light in the pool house, but everything was nothingness. It was totally dark, blacker than black. Then he said he felt that there was a thing, as he described it, over him. He said that this thing proceeded to drag him across the cold tile of the pool house. He could actually feel it on his back. Slowly but carefully, but very commandingly, very assuredly, said this thing placed him on the bed, and he felt a burden of weight on him, his whole body. And he said that this thing seemed to be telling him almost telepathically, I don't know who you are. I don't know why you're here, but this is where you will stay. Cliff said he passed out, and the next day he was trying to rack his brain and come up with a logical excuse. Now, here's where Cliff and I are different. He continued to live in the pool house. I would be out of there.
I'd be gone. Feet don't fail me now, right?
Exactly, exactly. So the thing is that he was something there, but he kind of reached what he considered to be a gentleman's agreement with it, that it wouldn't stray far from his bed. He would respect it, and he said that they had an uneasy agreement. Now, years later, he was talking to another tenant on Facebook, and he happened to mention, oh, some creepy stuff happened over there, and immediately she said, what happened? And she said that she had a friend who had lived in the pool house, and when she was in the pool house, she would have demonic thoughts, and she refused to go into the pool house without a Bible. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, could this have been sleep paralysis or something physiological? And he said, you know, he'd experienced some things like that, but this was so real, and with that affirmation from the other person, he totally believed that it was real. And like you said, feet don't fail me now. I would not have spent one more minute, let alone night, in that pool house.
We'll take a few more of your stories, Jim, and then we'll talk a couple of them next hour along with phone calls. A driver thinks she has hit a pedestrian, and then this happens.
Well, any of us, I think, who are drivers, one of the worst possible things you could think of, one of the most tragic, frightening things, would be to accidentally hurt somebody.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's the worst.
So this is the fall of 2002, and this young woman was coming home from a college course. It was about 8 p.m., 11 p.m. at night. She stopped at a stoplight, and as it turned green, she started to go, but a woman suddenly appeared right in front of her. She slammed on her brakes, but she saw the woman's mouth open to scream like she was recognizing she was about to hit. She threw her arms up, and this was Pam. She literally felt the car hit the woman. So immediately she's distraught. She puts the car in park. She gets out of the car to look. The woman isn't there to be found. She didn't know what to do, so she went home because she looked all. She's like, the woman's not here. Did I imagine this? What happened? And she was racking her brain. She happened to know a gentleman from work that lived on the same street where this happened. And he would always talk about ghosts. And they came in with a ghost story, and that prompted her to ask him if he'd seen anything. And he literally described the same woman that Pam thought she hit. More people have seen her, and apparently this woman was in the neighborhood, was a sleepwalker, got out of the house one night, and was hit by a car. So in other words, what she basically saw and experienced was kind of a replay of what happened. She didn't actually hit the woman, but she was witnessing a replay. And hearing that made her feel much, much better because, I mean, how would you feel if that happened to you? Because you would constantly be thinking, did I hit this person? Did I black out? And then, you know, it would just be really one of those frightening Twilight Zone minutes.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, so this was basically, it sounds like it was a replay. And I think that's an interesting thing. I mean, I think we tend to think that all ghosts are sentient and communicate with us and know that we're there and those kind of things. But I wonder sometimes how many of them are just kind of like some people out there, a lot of the audience will remember tapes. And if you didn't get a tape erased well and you tried to record something over it, you would hear a residual recording from the past of what had been on it originally. Maybe sometimes that's what we're dealing with.
Hey, Jim, since you've been doing these strange stories, have you found that they get even weirder and weirder as time goes by?
Yeah, they seem to. I mean, it seems like I think people are more open. I mean, even in the last 10 years, I think people have become more open and more comfortable with telling you kind of wild things. Whereas I think before there was a certain amount of ridicule. I think certainly shows like Coast to Coast AM has played a huge role in this, all the television shows, and maybe to a little tiny degree podcasts like mine, that those really weird stories have always been out there. But now people are saying, you know what, I'm going to tell my story because I heard somebody else that had a really weird story. So I don't think that it's the stories are changing. They might be in the UFO area. As you had a guest tonight, Peter Davenport, say. But I think in terms of ghosts and that sort of thing, I don't think the stories are changing in that area. I just think people are more willing to share them because of shows like Coast to Coast.
But they seem to be getting more frightening.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I know it's
dangerous almost.
Sometimes, you know, people like the spooky stuff. They like the spooky stuff, and they enjoy telling spooky stories. But I don't know. I think they're similar, but there's certainly some spooky ones out there for sure.
All right. We've got about six more stories from Jim when we come back. Plus, we'll start taking your questions and your stories, too, if you could share some of them with us. And then later on tonight, it'll be those open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. Jim's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com for you. And again, he's got a whole slew of books out there. They're his campfire stories, and he's got them all in book form.